All right, you ready to do this?
Yeah, let's go.
How you doing today, man? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
You look good. You look clean shaven. You're looking skinny, man. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and look at, one from like 3-4 months ago.
Yeah, or like a couple of years ago. That might be too dark for both of us. I had like a little nerdy haircut at one point. I was looking at some old videos. Like nice little part. Now I'm just like COVID shag everywhere.
Hey, get with the times.
Exactly. You've been running?
Yeah. Yep.
You following a plan or anything?
No. I did like 25 miles last week. So that's where I'm at now. I can go further, but you can't increase your mileage too much or else you get injured. I'm also old. And like before I could just go run, and now it's like I, you know, knees start to hurt, ankles hurt. Yeah, so yeah.
How many days did you do 25 miles? That seems pretty good.
Yeah, 5 days. I do 5 days. I take Monday off. I do short one Tuesday, medium one Wednesday, short one Thursday, Friday off, long run Saturday, and then short one on Sunday.
That's awesome. What's your long run on Saturday?
Well, that's the one that I keep trying to increase. My longest has been probably like 7.5 or 8.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not. So before, like, I used to measure them and analyze them, and I haven't been doing that this summer, mainly because I don't want to buy an Apple Watch because a new one is coming out.
So. Yeah, I just tapped the heart on the tweet about it, so I get notified.
Ah, wait, what do you mean you get notified?
There's like an Apple ad that comes up, or maybe I just follow them and they talk about the event, and it's like tap the heart to get notified. Then they respond to you and they say, all right, we'll let you know when it, as soon as it comes up, even though everyone in our industry knows exactly when it's going to be on.
Oh, is that like integrated into the Twitter app?
I think they
app?
Just, they have some script that, waits for you to like it, you know, and then they just reply to you and they add you to some list. Here, I'll just put it in Slack. It's pretty cool though. I'm always impressed by their graphics too, man. They always manage to do something kind of different, kind of new, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. But I'm excited.
I know. New computer, new phone.
You think so? I mean, new watch. I don't know if the computer's coming this time.
Wait, why do you? Because
all the leaks are just talking about the phone and the. Are we gonna get like scrubbed from the internet for talking about this? all the leaks talk about the phone and the watch.
Interesting. I figured. I've heard rumors of a new computer for like a year now since that M1 13-inch came out.
Yeah, so, I know. We're all waiting on it.
Yeah. I mean, I need it, man. This computer is struggling. I watched this video that is like really popular on YouTube this week, and it was shared a bunch on Twitter about how like solar flares can like flip bits in computers, and it's actually like way more common than you think, and it causes like all sorts of bugs. And so, yeah.
Really?
It just makes me really, we'll link it in the description, but it makes me really happy that we work with software and not hardware.
Yeah.
Even though I guess this is like affecting software, it's still like, it's a hardware problem in my mind.
That is pretty crazy. Well, that we did an interview with Tom Dale like a couple of years ago, and he was talking about how at NASA, when they first did the rocket there, like the atmosphere inside of either the space station or the rocket or something, it was so big that there was like new effects. There's new, like, you know, results of physics like that were affecting the normal engineering practices that the engineers hadn't accounted for because they had never worked on something so big.
So it just like it has like its own like rain and like ecosystem in there.
Something like that. And he was talking about like going to LinkedIn at the time and just how, you know, a big company with like a massive code base that's been worked on for years, millions of lines of code, kind of has that same thing where there's like, yeah, you know, and you can see how that could happen in, yeah, in a big code base. But that's the closest I think we'll get to that. Fortunately, I just work on new side projects every 6 months. So
hell yeah.
Best kind of software to work on. All right. Let's see what we have here. Yeah, we've been off for a few weeks. You had a little vacay. We just had some work going on, but happy to be back on the mics here. Been doing some React, been doing some side projects, been doing some consulting. So we got some stuff to talk about here. So this last thing, August 12th, I'm guessing we talked about all this stuff.
We did.
Yeah. So 31st is the last one here. So this first one was about forms, and I'm trying to remember what I was working on here. Okay, so I was working on my fitness side project, and I'm trying to come up, you know, just with good patterns for ways I like to do things, and one of them was adding a new goal, and it's just a little form that pops up. I share on my Twitter. I was working on some animations, but basically you have the screen and then the form comes up in like a little modal window at the bottom, kind of like an actions sheet on iOS. And, you know, this is an interesting pattern. We've done this a million times, but, and yet it seems like, you know, there's kind of always new ways to do it. And you always end up, I don't know, it's not like always obvious the right way to do it. So basically, like, the two buckets are like, make the form a dumb component or make it a smart component. And then there's some things in between, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's a dumb form component, it kind of just takes in values naively. And then when you click submit, it has like an on submit handler that the parent deals with. So this is like a goal form, but the goal could be coming from like a new or like an editing, you're editing a goal. So if you click edit on a goal, maybe you pop up the window and you pass in the goal. And then when you click save, you're either like creating it, so like posting it to a thing, or like sending a put or a patch to update it, something like that, right? So that's kind of one way to do it. And then the other way to do it is to make it like a smart form, where the argument here is kind of that this is a goal form and it's only ever used to create a goal in the system. And if it's creating a goal on the back end, then if other parts of the UI, which are visible, they're mounted at the time when you create it, like they are in my case, those should be derived from basically the server state. So like the list of goals for the user is like coming from the server. And so, you know, those goals could be updated by another user or another browser. So you already are thinking or should be thinking about how should this page change if the server state changes. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, you could make the goal form like a smart form, and it could just have the action and the mutation locally that knows how to take the values, create a goal. And then all it does is send something like an after save callback so that the parent can dismiss it or redirect or whatever. And I like that because I feel like it makes it easier to refactor a lot of times. Do you really need a coupling here between like your parent, let's say homepage component and the goal form? If you start refactoring and wanting to put it deeper down, should you have to thread all of those callbacks through? It kind of feels nice to open the goal form, see the mutation. Then also the form like has the save action, which is an async function that's going to your GraphQL server or your REST server. And libraries like Formic have like an is submitting flag that if you pass it an async function, I mean, I guess you could always pass in an async function from the parent, but again, it's kind of just nice seeing it all right there.
I think the biggest argument here is just like the boundary is super clear. Like if I have a smart form, it's just new goal form and that's it. I don't have to think like, oh, what are all the props it needs? When do those props change? Like, you know, what props, like, are there any like impossible props that I can pass in? Like if you have like two goals and you pass in half the props from one goal and another half from the other goal, like,
right,
can I find myself in that spot? And so when you have like that smart component, the smart form, it just makes that boundary super hard and impossible to cross. And yeah, it's so much less context you have to hold in your head when you're reading that code.
I totally agree. I mean, it's you're not allowing any. We've talked about this in some of our Ember Map series where, you know, you don't allow, you're not exposing new props because you don't want it to be called with anything other than itself or a single goal or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I like that. And I think last episode we talked about the mutation stuff that automatically busts the cache. Right. So that's cool too. That kind of works well with this pattern. I like writing forms like this. And then if they happen to do a mutation in some leaf component, form component down the tree, it automatically is going to be able to refetch all live queries. And that way, you don't have to thread any sort of refresh callback through. So what I was running into was, in this particular case, a goal points to a category. So it's a fitness app, so you can have goals for things like going to the gym or having good nutrition. And so when you create a goal, you point it to a category. And so you can only create a single goal per category per week. So when you click new goal, you need to know what the available categories are. And so the ones you don't have goals for. So let's say there's four categories and you already have two of them. You only want the other two to be showing in that dropdown, let's say. And I already have those available categories being fetched and filtered in the parent. So I just passed them in. So I was having this interesting thing happen where you pass them in and you render the form. There's another point I want to make really quick about the smart form, which is nice, which is that if it gets unmounted, it can clean itself up and it makes it a lot easier than the case where the parent is like has some new goal state that you need to reset on closing. So that's really nice too. So you pass in the available categories so you can render this goal form. And what happens is I'm using Formic, and in Formic you pass in initial values. And Formic is a component, takes an initial value. You can also use like use Formic or use form or whatever. But the same idea. First time it renders, it initializes the state of the Formic component with those values. So similar to React state, the first time, the use state from React. If you render the component the first time, it's going to initialize a state with that value, but it's really just an initial value. After it gets re-rendered, it's going to hold on to it. That's exactly what Formic does. And so it can see the form with the available categories, and it all works great. Now, what happens is the component, the goal form gets rendered. And so the initial values equals part, that code's going to run. It's just that Formic's not going to do anything with it. Just like if you had an expression in the parentheses of use state, that code would run every time it's rendered. Even if it's ignored on subsequent re-renders, right? The problem I was running into is like I start the default value for the form with available categories access this zero array, like the first element of the array. And then once you make the final goal for the final category, you save the goal, the parent refreshes. Now there's no more available categories, so you shouldn't even be able to add a goal, but the goal form's still there, hasn't been dismissed yet, and it re-renders quickly before it gets dismissed. Available categories is empty, so you get an error because you're trying to access the first element of an empty array. So what you really want, what I was hoping to find was a lazy way to run the initial values. First of all, because this is not a state I should even have to think about, and second of all, because Formic's not even using it after the first render. So it doesn't even make sense to have that code for you to of course I can have defensive logic. Of course I could do available categories ? 0 whatever.
But that doesn't naturally come up. Like that's
it's not something you should have to even consider. Like if you could type these paths in your system, this should be like a type error or whatever.
Yep.
So I was really hoping to find something like, I'm pretty sure useState has this where if you pass a function in, it only runs the first time, right?
Yeah. Which I've just, side note here, trolled myself trying to set a function in state and not understanding why it was causing errors in my app. Anyway.
Right. So you can't put a function in state unless maybe, could you return a function from the function?
That's it. Yeah, you probably could. I think I put an object with a function in it to get around this, but it was just like one of those, like, there goes 6 hours. We're anyway, back to your thing. Like, yeah, it's really weird because we think of our like components running just, oh, it's going to run when it mounts and it uses it for initial values. But like the reality is it runs every time. And yeah, you don't want to do the defensive coding. Like you definitely don't want to do it because it's like the only reason you're adding that defensive coding is like the reaction to a bug. It's not a natural thing that like a programmer needs to read or know about. So
totally. It's totally fine to use the question marks if you're legitimately writing code for like handling different cases. If it doesn't matter if this is undefined or whatever, and it's just empty, whatever it is. But in this case, it's like you said, it's a surprise. And you shouldn't have to think about this state. This state is like an impossible state the app should never be in. So I took a look at React hook form because we've used that on a project. I really actually enjoyed working with it. And it's the same thing. Initial values doesn't take a function that it can use to lazily run the first time. But that's when you're coding that logic. So that kind of sucks. Of course you could like use an effect or something like that, but then you get that first frame without the right data, which sucks. I guess if you don't even need an effect, you could just check values and I don't know. You could do something maybe during render that the logic only runs in the first frame. So you still get a consistent frame the first time.
Yeah. The React hook form project that we worked on, I had a bunch of forms that had to reset themselves and I had to deal with this. I had to deal with like data change. Basically you're like moving through, you can imagine like tap, like one form that's always displayed and then like you're moving through different users that get loaded into that form. So you have to reset them. Right. And the form is always rendered, so it's hard to do cleanup. So I used effects for this.
Right.
The effect with like, you know, you're talking about goals and selecting a goal. If it's a drop down, the nice things about drop downs is like you can do the work in an effect because the UI is just on like select an option, you know, that default placeholder option. So the effect runs so fast the user isn't gonna go and open the drop down before the effect runs.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
I don't have a good answer though. Like doing it in effect is similar to like doing it with a question mark where it's like, why is this being done? It's very defensive. So.
Right. You know, what's interesting too, is like you get like Dan Abramov's voice in the back of your head in certain of these situations, because you're like, wait a second. I want a form and I want to submit it and then I want to dismiss it. And like, I don't want everything to freaking re-render all the time. Like I'm just coding this one user flow. This should be it, right? But then you have like, don't interrupt the data flow in the back of your head. And it is actually exposing a path where, what's the path that it's exposing? So this is like a quiz question for you. Like what could happen to actually make this actually a
real bug? I mean, you open up two browsers, you have two tabs open and you add a goal in one and you want the other one to like, well, there's a real question here is like, what should happen when you do that?
Exactly.
Should it update or should it let you submit the second browser and then say like, oh, you actually already have a goal for this?
Exactly.
And then there's like a deeper thing. If you take this to like its logical conclusion, it's like, okay, we want our apps to always be reactive. So if I'm like using like a hook, like use cookie, no matter how that cookie changes, I want my component to re-render, whether like the server changes a cookie or I edit it in DevTools, like use cookie should be reactive
up to date.
My cookies changing. But like, okay, so if I'm making a form to edit data on the server, like if I start typing in that text box, and then like someone else updates it, like, I don't want that server to just overwrite what I typed. So there is a fork or a branch that happens at some point. And your example here is awesome because it's kind of forcing you to address it right now, even though you don't want to.
Even though I don't want to. And there's only right now one user ever using the app. But is there like maybe you do open it and you've left it open and you open it. No, it's actually pretty interesting. So, but
Just one more thing. I mean, it is forcing you to address it right now, but you do have like a cheap, you could do the question mark thing. Right.
100% could, but I don't, but that's like, if you think about like me using that as my pattern and then I go on to the next form, I'm not going to remember to do that. I want a pattern that I can take to any form and explain to other people and say, this is why we do all these things. You know what I'm saying? So what I was thinking, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, like, I think some folks run into these problems and then say, oh, we need to immediately handle what happens when there's multiple users editing it. But that's not actually a problem because there's only one user. So the question mark just lets you punt on that. But yes, I get
it's fine to use the question mark if you're reaching a deadline. But this is more like smart form versus dumb form. You could do either one. We have good reasons to want to default to using smart forms, and patterns like having mutations automatically revalidate all live queries actually lets you get there and is a generalizable thing that will make your life better, even in the short term. And just having one way to do forms, I think, is actually pretty awesome. And one way to do mutations is awesome. You know how we do. Yeah, like, yes. We just like to have, I want all my forms to look the same. It's like, in my mind, I'm writing like a Rails guide for React that I want to be able to reference on every project and teach as a way to like stop yourself from getting into a bad bug. And if you did type this system somehow, this should fail. This shouldn't type check because you haven't accounted for this code path. You're going to have an exception at runtime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this, and I think in general, you do want to give the user control over what happens if there is a conflict or they're trying to make an invalid request because the server state's changed in the meantime, right? Just like on GitHub, you know, if you were editing, or sorry, like Stack Overflow, you're editing a question and then a message comes up and it says this question's out of date, click here to refresh. So I'd like something that would let you do that sort of thing. And I think it's really just having like a draft, like what we've done in the past. So I think it's like, and again, I want to have a way to think about all forms like this, but it is true. Whenever you go to create or edit data that's derived from server state, in this case, the goal is all on the client side, but the available categories are coming from the server. If you're ever working with anything that has to do with server data editing or server constraints, which this is in this case, you're really working with a draft. I mean, you are, by the virtue of the fact that you could disconnect from the internet and still do something, and you're disconnect. I mean, as soon as you fetch data, you're working with a draft of it. But in this case, you know, reads are easier to just update stale while revalidate pattern with whatever tool you're using. But with mutations, it actually matters. So I'm feeling like I think the initial values thing would be good if it was lazy, because that's built into the form libraries, and it's just like, all right, I'm making a form for a copy of this goal. And if the goal updates, let's say, you know, maybe I get a function that's like my buffered SWR hook that lets you use buffered SWR. It gives you the data, and then it gives you a stale Boolean, and then it gives you an update function you can call to update it. But in the meantime, you're working with a snapshot of the data that you fetched at the time of the request. So that's kind of what I am thinking I'm going to head in the direction of, where you have a snapshot of like the available categories and all this data that you have, and then you put that into the form. And then when you go click save, if there's a problem, then you surface it. Because it's stale or it's gone out or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty cool. And I'm trying to think about the best way to do that. And it might just be, you know, I guess the first thing would be like I don't want to make an effect. I guess you could put it into state lazily. That's what I would do. Use state, function, make a clone of it, and then you've got your copy. You've got your draft. And then you pass that into the form, let's say. And I think that'd be pretty good.
I'm trying to remember. I just pulled up code. I ran into this in like one of the first React apps I wrote, and I did something like that where I had a reducer that stored all the data. It was like global data, like global documents. Mm-hmm. And then I could like fetch from it, but I didn't like, you are editing things in a modal. So if you're, if a modal pops up and you start editing it, I didn't want what was behind the modal to just change as you edit it.
Exactly.
So I had a like use draft hook that would copy it and then like would put some data in the object, so it could link it back to the original. So when you clicked save, I think I tweeted this. I should find
interesting. This always gets tricky with relationships. I think we actually tried to do something like this in Ember, didn't we? Draftable model or something like that.
Yeah, it's really hard with the relationships. Also, this app I was working on, it's like it is documents. It's just documents. So there's no there could be a relationship, but it would literally be like a key in your document where you go look up another document. So you don't ever have to, like, if I was in that spot, I could just create multiple drafts of I could like loop over my document, find its pointers, create drafts of those. Right. Or like something like Rails, where you don't do that. In Rails, you just do like post.author.posts. Right. And that gets really hard, because then it's like how much do I copy? And
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
No, but I think that would be good, if there, especially if there's a really easy way to do it, you know, user form, user equals, I don't know, either you call a draft user right there, or the form has a nice way to just copy what it gets the first time, and then that's it. And like that could work everywhere. And it's like you said, it prevents a lot of issues where, yeah, you don't actually want to do the optimistic stuff as you're editing it, or maybe even as you save it. Maybe you want to, again, dismiss the form and then animate the index view in the background or something like that. The other thing I ran into was I basically started with some modals from Tailwind UI, and I wanted to transition them. And so they have this transition component, but the only way that it works is by having it always rendered. So you have your goal form always rendered. You wrap it in a transition that gets an open prop. This is another problem, because if your goal form is always rendered, and let's say it's doing any sort of logic or fetching a query, like doing a use query, you're kind of just screwed, because again, you're having to account for code pass. This thing's rendered even though it's not rendered on the screen. Yeah. And now you're having defensive coding. And so I took a little bit of time to add Framer Motion, which is awesome. And, can let you actually mount and unmount the component and still animate it out. And so that's awesome. So that's a pattern I'm really happy with. I'm always going to use, because you shouldn't have to worry about a component being mounted when it's not mounted or making queries or whatever.
Yeah. Yes, totally.
So that's like deal breaker for me. I mean, that's like a note, that's like a, like set in stone for me. Like if I ever am coming into projects and like people on the team are writing defensive coding because it's confusing why this thing is running, even though that's the way to handle that. You know, it's the normal way to do conditional logic in React anyways. It shouldn't matter that you want to add animations to it.
Right. This was like the exact one of the other things with that React Hook Form project that we worked on, is that it used those transition components. And so it was always rendered even when it wasn't rendered, which made it confusing. Yeah. The effect stuff does help there. Like the effects are better than class components for this sort of thing,
because what do you mean?
I had an effect that just says like when the user changes, run this command. There's just other stuff. There's just other stuff in that, like your user form can, since it's like always rendered, could literally be rendered without a user. There's just like,
and then
it works and like we got it nice, and but it just,
you shouldn't
there's
have
a
to
lot
do,
you have to hold.
That's the other thing too, is that if you have it always rendered, even if you have some defensive code that will let it render without a user or whatever, you could dismiss it and then open it again. And like you said, now you have to have some imperative code that calls reset form or something, because it's holding onto the state. Whereas again, you want, like, there's a deeper point here that state makes UI programming really hard, and global state is harder than local state. And part of the advantage of React's component model is like, how do you get rich UI while having as much of the benefits from like the full page refresh model of server side rendered apps? Because when you get a full page refresh on every link click, you buy yourself a lot of freeway. Like you buy yourself of leeway. Let me say that sentence again without the errors. When you have the full page refresh ability of a server rendered app, where every link that you click, you're basically starting from scratch. You've thrown away the state. It's like turning it off and on again. And it buys you a lot of leeway, because there's a lot of state that you don't have to clean up. You don't have to worry about it. And there's tons of bugs, you know, that don't actually become bugs because of that ability to do that. Now, once we go to SPA world, it's like you've lost that. But if you embrace this component model where, yeah, once you navigate away and there's a subtree that gets unmounted, it's literally all gone. It's cleaned up. You don't have to think about it. I mean, imagine if you had to write like a cleanup function every time you wanted to reset state in some component. That would be insane. But when you do this kind of thing, you basically have to, you're back in that world. So that to me is like a trigger. It's like a spidey sense going off that like, no, this component's being unmounted conceptually, visually from the app. I should not have to write any logic to imperatively clean up the state if it's just pointing to local state, you know?
Yeah. By the way, this should be a talking point when people argue about server rendered apps versus SPAs. I think this would be like high up in my ammo list if I was
arguing. Huge benefit for server rendered apps.
The server rendered apps, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hear people talk about this a lot. I hear more like, oh, it's faster and easier to run on the server and whatever. I don't want to.
No, it's true though. And it's also baked in by default. So if you're on a multi-step wizard and you click next and it's a link to a new URL, the only thing you can do in a framework like Rails is figure out what to render based on the URL. So you are constrained and your hands are tied from the beginning to make sure that this UI is derived from the router, from the URL. And that means if you refresh or hit the back button, it's all working and you don't have any other choice. Whereas how many apps have we seen in React where you click next and then you just set step two and then you redo it, or you set some, you know, state in global context that's not derived from the URL, then you've made an app that if you refresh, it doesn't make any sense. The back button doesn't work. I mean, this happens a ton in SPAs. So I would say that's absolutely like a huge feather in the SSR camp's hat.
Yeah. Also, just to bring it back, it's pretty cool you were able to get Framer Motion in and solve this problem with Framer Motion, because you get, it still remains animated, right?
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I want to make a video eventually. I haven't made a video in a while because I've been busy, but my first step was going to be to write it all up in a blog post and basically just going exactly from copy pasting and Tailwind UI and then replacing transition with Framer Motion using the same values. And it's pretty awesome. It works really well. And then what I wanted to do at the end, I wanted to tweak it. So Framer Tailwind UI has a modal show up in the middle of the screen with a little fade up, and modal it's at the bottom. I actually want it to slide up from the bottom. And so there's a few more tweaks to get that to work. Take off the scrolling and like have a full page background so you can just do 100% up. And then I looked up the iOS action sheet component from Ionic framework, and they've spent a lot of time making web components that match like iOS and Android animation values. So they have like some easing curves that match like Apple's easing curves, and they have like a background that matches it. And I just use those in Framer Motion, and it looks freaking sweet. I mean, it looks just like an action sheet on iOS. So that's pretty awesome. So I want to make a post for all that, because it was like exciting to work on it. And then you still have this great thing where, yeah, the component is just, it's just if is showing new goal form, you know, and then so the component gets rendered only when you click add, and then it gets thrown away once you get rid of it.
Cool. I have a question about, I got a text I have to respond to.
No, it's okay.
Maybe we should invite them on the podcast.
Is it Teams?
No, it's my wife.
Oh.
Hello. Would you like to be on a podcast?
If she's asking what do you want for dinner, can you take my order? Sam would like burritos. No beans. Extra steak.
Nice. Yeah, you don't know my household. I think we're having chicken and kale salad tonight. So.
Hey, that sounds fine to me.
It sounds awful. But beggars can't be choosers. So. Okay, where were we? Okay. I have a question about organizing the frame of motion stuff. So every time I find examples like, oh, use this easing curve or use this duration or this spring, I just paste it right into the motion.div or whatever I'm animating.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, 6 months later, I come back to my app and there's just all these random animation values just spread everywhere. It's like, how are you organizing these?
Well, that's a good question. I have both the backdrop being animated, the modal backdrop, and then the overlay, and then I have the actual window sliding up from the bottom, and they have to have the same duration, and they actually use the same easing curve. So all I just did const at the top, const durations equals in is like 400 milliseconds, out is 300. So like duration.in, duration.out, and then easing curve is like a const at the top. And I always forget this. It's so easy, though. It's so frustrating that frame of motion docs don't show this. But if you want different transitions for enter and exit, they point you to like all those variants.
Yeah.
Gobbledygook. And it's like way more than you need. You can just do enter equals opacity 0, comma, transition colon. And then you can do easing and duration right there. So that's super easy. And yeah, I just put them right there. But I'm sure you could extract it to
almost like a styled component.
Where yeah, like you could you like yeah, a component that's like a slide sheet. Up kind of thing.
But yep. But that's the thing. Then you don't just have one div animating. Like you have the action sheet and the background animating. So it's
right. But there are two motion divs. But it's all in right now. It's all in my goal form. And then as long as there's a animate presence in the ancestor somewhere, it'll work just fine. So, I haven't run into that yet, but I'll let you know as I add more animations throughout the app. Cause the next thing I want to do is like, I'm changing the screen. I've showed you the screen before, right? It has like the ring that shows like 4 out of 15. And then it has like the bar charts for like, you know, gym, nutrition, whatever. I'm going to take the bar charts away and make like a day view. But if you are in the day view and you add like gym, I went to the gym today, you hit plus. I want it to like, whoop, like, I want it to like go towards the ring and add it as a total, like Mario style, like your total stars, you know, so that you can view it today. But then if you want to see the week's progress, you see it up there and you kind of make that connection. So I'm going to be adding more, like more animations. And so I'll let you know. But so far, no, just keeping it all in the goal form. Super simple.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I guess that was the last thing that I had here, which was just, it was super easy. Like, you know, Tailwind UI has all the values for animating in and out on their components. And it's just really easy to add frame of motion, take out transition. There's a few tricks. So that's what I want to put the blog post on. But it wasn't too bad at all. And you just have like an animate, initial, and exit, and you can just literally get the values from there. And you're just doing it in JavaScript instead of with Tailwind classes, you know, and because you're not doing CSS transforms. But it's pretty awesome. I mean, it looks great, works great. And yeah, I want to like, I had just been meaning to like read through the frame or motion docs cover to cover. I always have this weird experience where sometimes I get things working right away, and sometimes, I don't know, it's just like, I can't get something working and I don't understand why, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's every animation library.
I know. Really, I know.
Oh, where is your animate presence? Is it?
Yeah, that's the other thing actually that I want to improve. So I'm glad you asked that. Let me just pull it up right now.
I guess we should explain animate presence for.
Yeah. So animate presence is a component from Framer Motion. Basically, you could use the, you could use Tailwind UI to do your whole modal and still have the benefit where you're doing basically if, you know, you're doing like a ternary, like if, or just if is showing new goal form and render the new goal form. And then you have kind of the values set, CSS classes set, and you can animate it in with just Tailwind classes. So with just CSS transitions. The problem is animating it out, because as soon as React unmounts it, they don't provide any way to like hold on to the DOM structure there enough for you to be able to render it out, they unmount it immediately. So there's libraries like Frame or Motion that provide something, ways around this. One of the thing that they provide is called Animate Presence. So you wrap the parent in Animate Presence. I'm guessing somehow it makes a clone of it. And then if it finds any motion.div, which is another import from Frame or Motion with an exit prop, it will animate it from the animate values to the exit values. So it kind of holds on to a copy of it, even though from React's perspective, it's unmounted. Yeah, that works. Another thing I just remembered is my duration const at the top and easing. Well, duration really is the only one I do. I do if it's Cypress 0, otherwise 300 and 400. So now my tests don't matter at all about the animation. It's really cool because it was confusing. Like I would add the thing, and then if I went and hovered over the different steps of my test, like the goal form would still be there, but be asserting against the background.
Yep.
So that was pretty awesome. Yeah, that was really nice. So this is pages home, pages index, and it's my week. Go here. And right now I have it in the parent, which I don't like at all. So yeah, this is actually pretty interesting. First, can you just put Animate Presence in like the root of your app once? Didn't we do that? Didn't Ember Animated do that?
I don't know what Ember Animated did. I have it in the root of my app. I have it in my app component because I animate pages. I think there's some rules about direct descendants, and I haven't run it. I haven't done anything complicated enough where I've needed to know those.
That's the other really confusing thing. If you read the docs for Animate Presence, they say the immediate child needs to be a motion.div or motion.something, and it's just not true. It's not even true in their examples. And then it's like, well, do you need multiple Animate Presences? No. Like, I just have my dialogue here. So I basically have in my page component, Animate Presence. Then within that I have, if is adding goal, then render the goal form. And then the goal form has some motion divs inside of it, and it all works. So it's a little confusing, and ideally I wouldn't have to use Animate Presence at all. So if I can just put one Animate Presence in the root of the app, that would solve this. And then I could then it would just look like a normal component that's being conditionally rendered, and it has no one's aware that it needs anything to be animated. So that would be actually be awesome if I could do that.
Yeah.
And it seems like the thing about the immediate descendant having to be a motion element is just not true. So maybe that's just stale information in the docs. And if it is, then yeah, that'd be great.
Or we're just introducing some bug into your app.
Yes, it's possible.
I don't know which is more likely. Probably the bug.
But yeah, it's cool. The easings, it's just like I have this tuple or like this four element array with the values, the Bezier curve. So you just pass that into transition ease. And it's sweet. The overlay itself is a motion div, so I didn't even need an extra wrapper for that because headless UI's dialog.overlay takes an as prop. You can pass it in a motion div. I mean, this is the stuff where, like, man, these people just nail the composability of these libraries. Yep. Like, honestly, it is freaking awesome. And I have just static class name on it, fixed inset 0, background black. And then I have initial animate and exit. And then I have another div for the modal window itself. And then I have Formic in here. I mean, it's pretty diggity dope, I gotta say.
The fact that you can do headless UI's overlay composed with Frame or Motion's animated div and it works is jaw dropping. Like
it really is. I don't even know what dialog.overlay. I mean, I guess this is all being rendered in a portal or something. So I don't even know what it does. It's probably setting up some effects. Who cares? Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, to try. It adds something to the background to lock scrolling. I don't know, but it's freaking sweet. Like, this is sweet. So all I got to do is solve this available categories thing. I'm looking at it right here. Initial values, category ID, available categories 0.id, and that's where the error is. So, some sort of draft thing at the top of this file would be good. Or maybe you pass in a snapshot. Maybe you want to pass in snapshots, you know, so that you never have to worry about the data updating. But who knows? We'll see. Cool stuff, though. It's been a lot of fun working on this app. Has become like more and more fun to work on. and now that I have it mocked out with Mirage and I have testing with Cypress, like the date stuff is about to get really tricky too. I want to do it where, you know, if you open it and you're on Monday and it's now Tuesday, like I want to switch to Tuesday, just like a calendar app would. So it's all going to be hell yeah.
Why else would you use React, right?
Like, exactly. But I want to, I was going to actually ask you about this because I want to do something like if it's been 6 hours or something like that. Because think about it. Maybe I can brainstorm with you on this. So you open the app, you open, it literally looks like a calendar, like a week view kind of thing. And you're on Monday, it's today, right? Then you tap over to Tuesday. Okay. So do you leave it on Tuesday forever? Like, I think it's something like if you haven't opened the app in like 4 hours and you open it again, just put them back to Monday. Or if you open it late Monday night, it's 11 p.m., then the day turns over, you open it again, it's a new day. You want to show them the new day. But you don't want to just, on every render, obviously set the current day to today because you might be navigating around. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And this app could be open a long time because you're just opening it and that thing was rendered a week ago, but it's just going through the week and it's never really unmounting because, you know, I'm using it in like a home screen app and it just kind of all stays rendered. So I think the home component is going to be, or the app component's going to be rendered for a long time. So I want some sort of like use effect. I want like to know when it was rendered or the last time you changed the current day. And then if it's been, there's some really elegant hook for this. If it's been at least 6 hours and the current day doesn't equal today, and also today needs to be reactive and be recalculated every hour or something like that, then go ahead and set current day to today. Hmm.
It reminds me of Harvest, the time tracking app. If the day changes, they just pop up a little toast that's really unintrusive. And it just says, hey, it's a new day. Click here to show it. So it's not annoying when it gets in your way. But you do notice it. So maybe something like that.
But there could be, I bet there's some use clock thing that's like time since render or time since last day was selected. So if you click on a day, you reset it. It's really like, it's just debounced. It's like a debounced effect, but it's debounced over 6 hours, right? Or is it debounced or is it the other one?
It's throttle.
Throttled.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Because you don't so want to like, run it. I think it's throttle. Both throttle and debounce, I think, are going to be based off user action where you
I think it's debounce. Throttle, you happen right away. You don't want it to happen again. Debounce, you wait a certain amount of time and then you reset it if it happens again. So every time set current day runs, you debounce it. And then if it's been 6 hours since the last time and the day is a new day, then you update the date.
Gotcha.
Something like that. It'll be fun to build that.
You should test it. Yeah, you should just like make notes of when you like, if you are doing this and you're like, oh, it's on the wrong day, like you should just capture those situations, right?
Yeah.
Because that's going to tell you what, you know.
Oh, like as a user of it, you're saying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's confusing that I opened it and it was on this day instead of this other one. Yeah. Yeah, cool. Cool, man. All right, what do you say? Should we wrap it?
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.